Put the action into transaction. Don't just be next level. Be on a whole other level. Do business with Vox. Get Vox Fiber to your business starting from 2,499 Rand per month. Level up your experience with uncapped calling, hardware rental, IT solutions, and over 160 other products to enhance your business. Work smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
Well, how's it, Richard? How are you doing?
How's it, Duncan? Can you see me behind this virtual bottle?
I don't know, it kind of blends in with the background, actually.
Modern technology.
What are you having there today?
This is actually a collab between Mad Giant and Jack Black down the Cape, so a proper Joburg and Cape Town collab, a pale ale. It's pretty tasty, I'm not going to lie. But I do still prefer a Mad Giant's Killer Hop IP, their pale ale, which is pretty nice.
Okay, so this is a new one, is it?
Yeah, it's a collab, so like a limited edition. Probably use, like, just mix some recipes up and come up with something decent.
Oops, got some feedback from YouTube there. are you you only drink limited edition stuff anyway? So
no, just got. I mean, if it comes out, you have to try it, right?
Yeah.
But like, sure. I said, this is nice. Not a bad beer at all.
Yeah.
But I do prefer Mad Giant's their own pale ale, which is quite nice and fruity.
Yeah. So we've got a nice background behind us here, but it belies the fact that all around me right now is complete chaos as this office gets redone. I'm looking at a painter right behind my computer here. So
A painter.
There's someone painting right here. So it's amazing. Well,
that's terrible, man.
It's amazing what a green screen can do.
It could be anywhere. Are you painting green paint by any chance?
I'm thinking of doing that, actually, but
I don't know how practical that is. Your screen works well enough.
But if I did a whole wall in green, I could do stand-up and all sorts of interesting stuff, right?
But these walls are big enough for stand-up. Maybe not.
No, maybe, I don't think so. Might be, just.
But, I mean, are you talking about a wall from painting the wall from floor to ceiling?
Floor to ceiling, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that could work then if you're doing stand-up kind of news anchor. I'm standing here in the storm, Rehart. you have some effects outside.
I can be standing on top of the Drakensberg and the wind can be blowing through my hair, and I'll have a big fan on the floor, of course.
Do yourself a favor. I think I may have sent you a link before, but go see what Dr. Disrespect, he's a game streamer on YouTube, or on Twitch and YouTube. Go see what he does with his green screen. He's got these montages that he goes between when he rants or when he talks or whatever. And he's quite good with it.
You can do some amazing stuff with it. I'll definitely have a look. What's his name?
Dr. Disrespect.
I'll definitely have
quite a funny oak. Yeah, I mean, but if you just manipulate the images correctly, you can put yourself anywhere quite quickly, and you've got the board to just press the buttons, right? Technology.
Yeah. Little remote control. Press a button and I'm on top of Everest. Press another button and I'm in New York City. Hey, Martin, thanks for joining us. Martin says the paint fumes are getting me high. What are you saying, Martin? Going to be an interesting podcast in that case.
Oh, yeah.
Can't smell any paint right now.
Because you're high, Duncan, that's why. once you get to that point where it hits you, you know, it becomes part of breathing.
Yeah. I'm very glad for observant viewers of the show that I'm no longer wearing my, splint on my arm.
It
came off this week, so I'm very pleased to have my Garmin back on.
Can you do this?
Slowly. It's a little bit sore, but broken wrist for 4 months. It wasn't so fun.
Oh, typing wise, must be nice to have it a bit better now.
Bit better, yeah. Whoopsie, knocked my microphone. Right, that's enough banter for one show, I think. Should we get this show on the road, Richard?
Guess we're here now. We may as well.
We may as well. There's nothing else to do on a Sunday afternoon, right? I'm Duncan McLeod.
And I'm Richard Sonneberg.
This is Talk Central, episode 271 for the week starting 15 September 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube stream live on Sundays from about 1 p.m. and please hit that subscribe button.
On Talk Central this week, Blue Label's upcoming results and what we can expect them to say about Cell C.
Also on the show this week, Apple's new iPhones and Apple Arcade and Apple TV, plus USB 4 is coming, and there's news on the new Microsoft simulator.
Oh, yes. Flight simulator. Can't wait to talk about that. Well spotted, Rechard. And I can't believe I didn't pick that up. Flight sim fans, you're going to want to stick around for this podcast. It is Sunday afternoon. We are live streaming on YouTube, and it's time, of course, to talk about everything technology. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. Let's do our quiz.
The first question. Vox's Frog Food Networks this week said it was buying the network assets and customers of which fiber broadband provider?
And scientists, quite excitingly, have discovered water on a potentially habitable planet. They're calling it a super Earth. It's 110 light years away, so we're not just going to hop on a spaceship and go there. What is the planet called?
The third question, who this week said Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency would not be allowed to be developed on European soil?
And this week, two US companies had market caps above $1 trillion for the first time, and at the same time. Which companies are they?
And for a million points, Apple this week announced...
Trillion points.
Don't disvalue the points, devalue the points now.
A trillion zim points.
Apple this week announced three new iPhones. What are they called?
Nice, easy question to end the quiz this week, and we'll, of course, be talking about those iPhones shortly. But Blue Label and Cell C, the Blue Label results are going to be coming out in just over a week and a half's time, and I think it's going to be one of the most interesting set of results we've seen from a JSE-listed company in some time. They delayed them, of course, from late August, when they normally publish their results, to the 26th of September, which I think is a Thursday. And they did this on the back of a possible revaluation of their 45% stake in Cell C. And we all know the troubles that Cell C has been going through in the last little while. They've had their debt downgraded. There's talk of them possibly not paying suppliers. We know that they didn't pay MTN for the roaming agreement or didn't pay them on time. That roaming agreement is being renegotiated. So there's a hell of a lot going on behind the scenes. There's talk of a recapitalization of Cell C being led by Jonathan Baer's Buffett Consortium. So hopefully we're going to get details on all of that just less than 2 weeks from now. But this is it. It's down to the wire for Cell C. There's clearly a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes to try and save this company. And Blue Label is obviously very closely involved in all of that. I would expect through any recapitalization that Blue Label's shareholding in Cell C is going to be reduced quite significantly with the new shareholder or shareholders coming on board. We know that Telkom has said that they're no longer interested in buying Cell C. Whether they'll come to the table again, who knows? Maybe if there's, you know, if the pot is sweetened or it makes sense to them, maybe they'll return to the table. But it's crunch time for Cell C. This is it. In 2 weeks, we're going to know what their game plan is and how they intend to survive. It's interesting times.
Yeah, interesting and potentially, yeah, devastating, right? I mean, I'm a very happy Cell C fiber customer, and I'm sure that will be affected by this.
Oh, you're still on Cell C fiber. How are you finding it?
Oh, yeah. I've never had a problem with it. Throughput. Okay. The other day, I had double my speed coming down when I was downloading some stuff. So
double your speed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a 50 meg line and it came down on 100 meg. So,
wow, okay.
I shouldn't be saying it. I hope nobody notices. No,
I don't know. Actually,
it does happen from time to time. I don't know. It's the first time I've seen it, but sometimes it goes up to about 60. But anyway, we digress.
Sometimes I've seen that as well. Actually, I did a speed. When I do a speed test, I've got a 200 megabit per second symmetrical line, and sometimes on the uplink I'll see 300 megabits being reported in speed test, and I just assumed it's an error on speed test part.
Yeah, I think it's the way the software works. I'm completely talking without any kind of knowledge of this, but I would understand. I would imagine the software works that it's throttling. It's a software throttle, right? So depending on how a packet gets pushed through, I don't know, sometimes the software might just give you, I don't know, it might not recognize certain packets, or maybe the speed that it's being pushed at, I don't know, it's maybe pushed a bit faster.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen from local servers, though. I've only seen it when I download. I was downloading Adobe software or something like that, and I just saw my download spike, yeah.
Interesting.
Speaking from official service, by the way, not from Torrent.
we're not far, by the way, speaking of Adobe, from the next Creative Cloud Suite release. That should be coming out in early November. And we should also be seeing the release of Photoshop for iPad around the same time. So that should be about 6 weeks away from now.
Are you still using an iPad? Isn't that old technology? How's your Pro treating you still? I mean, that thing must be...
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's beautiful.
Nice thing to carry around for that type of product, for that type of software.
For sure. That's a beautiful device. But looking forward to playing with Photoshop for the iPad. And, of course, the new release. It's always exciting around this time of the year when it comes out.
Mm.
Although I thought this year's release was a bit incremental. I think they focused most of their attention on that video editing software, the sort of basic version of Premiere Pro. What is it called?
Final Cut.
No, that's the Apple product.
So are you talking about?
Adobe Rush.
Oh, Adobe Rush, yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Have you used Rush? Do you use it at all?
No, I'm a Premiere Pro user. I love Premiere Pro. So if I do editing, I just... Mm. Use that, even if it's simple mobile edits. But I need to kind of explore more of that.
Actually, now that we're talking about Premiere Pro, just jog my memory. Martin, who's in the chat room, actually introduced me between shows over the last 2 weeks to something called DaVinci Resolve, which is free to use software. There is a pro version which you pay for, but the basic version is pretty full featured. And it looks pretty powerful. I haven't had a chance to really sit down with it yet and try and edit some video software, but I was reading a couple of reviews about DaVinci Resolve online, and it looks like it's comparable to Adobe Premiere Pro in terms of feature set.
And look, if you're going for a free version, right? You're not paying for that software suite. Yeah. If you're going for a free version, then definitely. I don't know what the limitation is. I think it's maybe 4K output, if I'm not mistaken, on DaVinci.
Is it 4K output? I thought it was just a couple. Okay.
I don't know. I, there's a few suites that have various limitations.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a fantastic suite. I mean, a lot of kind of big budget movies have been edited in that. So it's certainly capable of that.
Yeah.
But I'm a loyalist and you know, I don't like to learn too many new pieces of software. You know, I kind of need to try and get really good at one piece, especially if you start doing advanced work. And I find with Adobe, you know, for all its problems with updates and features and things over the years, it's still very stable. And
it is great software.
It works within my suite of everything I need. Yeah. So, you know, I work with Illustrator and Photoshop all the time.
Yeah.
It's just easy to work within that. And I don't have file format issues. And
It's brilliant software. Very expensive software, but it's very good.
Look, I mean, I'm paying for it already because it's part of my job, right? But I can imagine if you're a new user and you're kind of coming into this, you know, unless you're going for that single product purchase that they offer, I would definitely go for the likes of DaVinci Resolve to start editing. I mean, without a doubt, I wouldn't, especially if you're just starting off. But I mean, if you start making money, then you can justify, you know, this expense every month because the tools do, you know, make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, if I just needed Photoshop and nothing else in the Creative Suite, I'd probably just pay for Photoshop and then use DaVinci Resolve. But I use Audition, I use Photoshop, I use Lightroom.
And Lightroom is so fantastic. I mean,
it is good. Yeah,
I'm finding I'm Photoshop. I'm using a lot more for a lot of crazy things, which is, and then I put it into other Premiere Pro, or I would extract something for, I would edit a photo in Lightroom first, and then do something crazy in Photoshop, and then put it into a video. Which I love that workflow.
Yeah,
especially once you kind of master your own, you know, tricks, tips and tricks that you kind of make the job a bit easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, without Photoshop, life will be a lot more difficult, I would say.
Yeah.
The video editing, yeah, you can still mess around with it, I guess.
I tried using the GIMP for a while as an alternative to Photoshop, and I just gave up. I threw my hands up in horror. I think once if you can master the GIMP, then I'm sure it's powerful, but I just couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah, again, it's powerful software, and if you don't want to pay for something and you learn it and you kind of, it can do a lot of things. But, you know, you're paying for a lot of ease of access and powerful tools, ease of use, sorry. And the tools within that, I mean, I often think of the, what was that tool that we always use, autofill, content aware fill, yeah. I mean, it still has its flaws, but I mean, it's saved so many hours of doing other work, you know.
It has. I use it all the time.
Trying to blend certain things, it's beautiful.
It makes you a bit lazy as well, but I use content aware fill 5-6 times a day.
You look for stuff that publishes on the web. It's a fantastic tool. Once you do quick stuff for print, it's you want to kind of be more careful with how you use it, because if you blow it up, it becomes a little bit more evident. But no, it's a useful tool if you use it correctly.
It's just like magic. If anyone hasn't listening to the show, watching the show, hasn't used Photoshop's Content Aware Fill feature, it is absolutely amazing. You just draw a line around whatever it is that you want to. How would I describe it? Extract or remove from an image. It does more than that, but let's say there's a couple of birds in the sky in a photograph you've taken, and you don't like birds, so you want to take the birds out. You just draw a line around them. It can be any shape, square, whatever. And you hit the Content Aware Fill button. I think it's Shift Backspace on the keyboard, and it just gets rid of it and it fills in the background.
Yeah, it's beautiful the way it works, and I've been using it since the first version, and it's evolved quite a bit. It's much cleverer now. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic feature. And if you spend some time getting to know Photoshop, there's an insane amount of things that you can do with it. I've just stumbled into design over the last few years, and now that I've kind of self-taught a lot of things. Mock-ups, product mock-ups, stuff that kind of businesses that I work with want. If you master something like Photoshop, there's a lot of things you can do. For them, if people just want to see something visually, whatever it is, you can mock it up, and you just use elements that you can get for free or you pay for on the web, and you can virtually really get anything done. It's fantastic. I love it.
That's incredible software, and I think you could spend years learning Photoshop and still not. You're still going to be scratching the surface in some respects.
Every year I say I'm going to learn. I want to learn more of the suite. I want to go through my Udemy course. Hopefully this year I'll do it, sit through and go through it.
It's finding the time that's the issue. But I must do the same.
It will save you so much more time. It's one of those tools where, if you understand the software better, because I use a lot of kind of hacks in getting around. I just do things where that I've kind of taught myself how to do. But there's certainly more efficient ways to do certain things. And once you know how to do it, your life will be a lot more efficient. If you're into that kind of design.
Martin says he's been using Resolve for around 3 years, editing his drone footage. Great software, lots of free community YouTube videos to get you going quickly.
Nice.
I'm definitely going to take the time to play around with it and learn the basics of it and decide whether I prefer it to Premiere Pro or not.
It's interesting. I mean, do you want to move away from Premiere, or are you just looking for alternative? Are you finding Premiere too difficult?
No, it's not that. I just like to play with software, to be honest. And I've got Premiere Pro. It's part of my Adobe subscription, so I probably should just use it. But
well, that's what I'm asking. Rather get good at one than trying to mess around with, because that's always been my problem. It's these software suites are so powerful. There's a lot of them out there. And Final Cut, if you're on Mac, is another fantastic contender.
One thing I did like was when I was setting up, when you set up install. DaVinci Resolve, it asks you whether you want to use the same keyboard shortcuts that Premiere Pro uses, or Final Cut or whatever editing software you happen to use. So that makes life a little bit easier. So it'll give you an interface and the shortcuts and that sort of thing that are more aligned to Premiere Pro to get you in easier.
Clever. Yeah. Look, I have to give kudos to Premiere Pro. I don't know if the other software suites do it, but they've really jacked up the effects and the overlays within Premiere Pro. So a while ago, I remember just having to use and kind of push through After Effects to get some of these things done, buy a template, modify it, and then put out what you want to put out.
Yeah.
Now within Premiere Pro, there's what do they call it? It's graphics within your kind of Premiere Pro overlay. I forget what the actual name is. But there's a whole bunch of templates built in, or you can download some, or you can create your own. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. I mean, it's akin to what you can do in After Effects to a degree, obviously. But within that one suite, you can do a lot of things. You never have to actually go out of it. It's something I haven't really found with the other guys. I don't mean with Resolve. How would you get special effects in? Or how would you create special effects? You would still have to have After Effects, probably.
Probably.
It'll be interesting to see. Maybe they do have it built in. They've got other software suites, right? DaVinci isn't just limited to the video editor.
Yeah. So let's talk iPhone. What do you think of that design on the new iPhone?
I mean, it's kind of nice. I like it. It's kind of bold, and it's especially. I mean, we know everybody with the iPhone is generally speaking kind of shoots photographs, right? And serious kind of phone photographers like to go to iPhone. So, I mean, it's making a nice statement. This is a proper shooter.
Mm. It's in your face, yeah. I had our colleague Nafisa Akabor on the podcast this week to review the new Samsung Galaxy Note 10 Plus. And we chatted a bit about the new iPhone, and she hates it. She hates that design. She says it's ugly. But I think in green, and it makes a bold statement. I think it looks sexy.
I mean, what else are they going to do? This is a question. I mean, they can make it look the same as the previous thing, but I mean, looking at the size of those, I mean, okay, the lens isn't the size of that little round protrusion at the back. So if you look at it closely, the lens is still the same kind of size.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like it. It's maybe, you know, it looks a little bit more aggressive. Like
it does. It's
intended to be a camera.
I don't think it had to be that big, but they did it deliberately. It was a design decision by Apple, and I think it looks nice. It looks nice.
Yeah, I think it's not something that to make me turn away from it. But I can understand if people are a little bit more discreet with their camera and they just like a slicker design. You know, this is going to be like, well, what is this?
Yeah. The reviews are, of course, yet to come in about these cameras, and this iPhone is all about these cameras.
I'm sure it'll be good.
But it is also a bit of a case of Apple catching up with the Android hardware. Android has the Android world has kind of overtaken Apple in terms of smartphone photography.
Mm. Yeah, look, I mean, the photographs that I still take with my P20, my Mate 20 Pro is beyond insane. And I'm talking about using it for kind of bigger projects and things.
Yeah.
Apple has always been strong in that respect, and their low-light stuff has been getting really good over the last two iterations that I've seen. This time, I don't know, the demos they showed at that release or that event last week made some pretty bold claims, so it'll be interesting to see if that actually works at well, and also what the noise is when you push it up. But it's funny how your cell phone, I mean, when last did you actually take out your DSLR to shoot anything?
Not for a while, only when I go to press conferences, actually.
Yeah, I still use it from time to time, but I much rather put out my phone because the quality, especially in low light conditions, you know, my SLR with a flash or my smartphone, you know, I choose my smartphone for low light any day of the week.
It just, for general pics, for sure. For general photographs, if you're out and about, want to take a quick
But with 20 megapixels, I mean, you can do so much with it. Yes, you might not get the sharpness, but if you're going to blow it up at that size, you know, again, if you're a pro, you're going to have a right solution. You're going to have the lights, but for... everybody else, it's
And if I go to a press conference and I'm sitting in an audience and I need to get a picture of the CEO of a company, I'm not going to use my cell phone because obviously I'm just not going to get a good picture because I want to use a long lens and I want to get a close up picture of whoever it is, and I just can't do that with a cell phone.
And you want to look a bit more pro, right? You don't want to be walking around. I mean, but that kind of, I guess, that stigma is changing a little bit. But I wouldn't be hesitant to do that if I need to, that photograph. In fact, I have done some profile photographs when somebody needed it quickly.
I've done the same.
Something quickly, and then just maybe touch it.
As long as you can get close to your subject, it's fine. But if you're a distance from your subject, you're going to need a lens.
True. But in these big expo event halls or these press briefings too, the problem is lighting is always a problem unless you have a nice flash on there. Yeah. Where again, you can probably get a nicer, especially if there's a screen behind the person, some ambient lighting, that kind of profile shot would look much nicer if taken from your phone than it would from your SLR.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, your phone obviously processes a lot of it, so.
Yeah. No, they've become very good at low light photography, and the quality of these phones is amazing. But the proof will be in the pudding, of course. And the first phone should be in the hands of reviewers. When is this phone coming out? Is it the 27th?
I don't recall the date, but it's soon, right?
I think it's the 27th. Yeah, in South Africa on the 27th. I think it may be a few days earlier internationally. It's a nice looking phone. I wasn't blown away by the Apple keynote this year, and I haven't been blown away by Apple keynotes for a couple of years now. But it's a competent phone, and I think Apple needed what they needed. They did what they needed to do to remain competitive with the Android world. They certainly haven't leapt ahead. There's no 5G in this phone. We know the Mate 30 Pro, which is being launched this coming week, by the way, will have a 5G chipset in it, which is actually pretty pointless in the South African context, at least, because there are no 5G networks yet, and there won't be for a while.
Yeah, but we know when they build these phones, right, it's kind of, let's just get
bold. Future-proofing.
Future-proofing and just getting, you know, making it easier for them to build these devices. Otherwise, they have to have another SKU, and it's just nightmare. The other thing that was I don't know if it's interesting, but they did the term slow fees. I don't know if you remember that from.
Oh, when I heard that, I just cringed. I put my head in my hands and I just thought, no, Apple, what are you doing?
The idea was great and I loved what they were trying to say until he said slow fee. And
slow fee.
Ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, that kind of slow-mo on the selfie can produce some pretty cool, I mean, especially if you'd like to produce content like that, you know, yeah, featuring yourself. And we know a lot of people are like that. It's a nice little touch, I think.
Slophy. It's the worst word I've heard in a long time. In fact, we should make Apple our loser of the week for coming up with the term slophy.
Worst word ever, yeah.
So there we go, new iPhones. So iPhone 11, the price dropped slightly. I think it was, about I forget the exact price before, but it was something like $749 and now it's $699, something like that. Or it was $700 and now it's $650. They've dropped a little bit. Price of the Pro versions have stayed the same, of course.
Would you get one?
Not at the price. It's too expensive. You can get a better deal in the Android world for thousands of Rand less.
Yeah, that's kind of the sad. I mean, it's always been premium priced, but now it's just kind of made it a little bit of a joke, I think.
Yeah.
You're not getting that much value out of it. If you're in the iPhone world and you're getting contract or getting on contract, you know, you'll probably be happy with it and you know, you'll be paying your premium 1,000 odd Rand for it.
Well, put it this way, we know that Samsung's premium devices are also not that aggressively priced, but if you get a 256 gigabyte version of this iPhone 11 Pro Max, it'll cost you in South Africa probably in the region of 28 or 29,000 Rand. You can also buy a 256 gigabyte Galaxy Note 10 Plus, which has a larger screen, a better screen, arguably, and a pen with it, if that's your thing, for 23,000 Rand. So 5,000 to 6,000 Rand less than the equivalent iPhone. Is that premium justified? I don't think so.
Well, how many people buy this phone cash? I don't think a lot of people buy it cash. A lot of people put on a contract, and that amount of money is probably a 50 to 100 Rand premium difference, right? So people I don't think people look at it necessarily in terms of 5,000 Rand saving.
Yeah.
They want an iPhone because it's one of those desirable, high desire items, and you want to have it.
Buying it for the brand.
People are going to go for it regardless, I mean, I certainly would, because I've moved away from it and I appreciate what the Android world has got to offer. There's no value in that high price for me. I certainly would be looking at a different Android.
I agree. I mean, if the price was in the same ballpark as Android flagships, then I would probably get one.
Perhaps. Are you an Apple user for your notebook? I mean, or you know, kind of, you don't know, too care, worried about the ecosystem.
I don't care about the ecosystem. I use an iPad. I use a Windows computer. And I use an Android phone, so as you can tell, I definitely don't care about the
I just find it's easier with if you have Android and Windows as opposed to having an iPhone and Windows. I mean, you can still sync your stuff to the cloud, right? But the phone itself, I guess, what you can do with Android as a power user is still a few nicer features on there.
Yeah,
I think.
And there's a few things I don't like about Apple: the fact that it forces Safari on you as the default browser. There's a couple of things I don't like about it, but if it was the same price, I would probably, every time I upgrade, I'd probably switch between them. I'd probably go Android, Apple, Android, Apple, Android, Apple, just to keep in mind what's going on on the different platforms. But the other interesting stuff out of the keynote this year were the announcements about the subscription services. So Apple Arcade was launched at $5 a month. That will be coming to South Africa as well. And then Apple TV Plus, which is their Netflix competitor, which I think surprised everyone at coming in at $5 a month, which is significantly below the price of Netflix. But I think that reflects the fact that Apple TV Plus at launch is not going to have all that much content.
Mm. But even at that price, for sure, they'll probably start pushing it up over the next few years too.
Yeah.
How is anybody making money off it, or any of the artists, or any of the shows? I mean, that's kind of still the good question. At $5 a month, that's very little, right? And they're giving it away for free to all users or
for 1 year.
Device users, for 1 year.
Mm. It's all included. It's all. I'm sure the actuaries at Apple have worked it all out quite carefully.
No, for sure. I mean, they wouldn't do it at a loss. But it's their label too, right? So that it's their fundage or their the shows that they fund essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you, I've watched a couple of these trailers that are coming to Apple TV Plus, and I must say none of it's really grabbed me particularly. I think Netflix is a much better slate of content.
Yeah, in terms of general, just what you can get. But there's just so much out there. I mean, I often hear of a show that somebody raves about and I've never heard of it, and it's the latest and greatest thing. And they really, I mean, a few years ago, we only had like two or three things. Lost was, everybody watched Lost at the same time, right?
And,
but now, it's crazy. It's too much. There's too much out there, I think. I'm just getting older and more cynical with these things, but there's a lot of content out there.
I don't think I'll be signing up for Apple TV Plus at launch, although it is certainly coming to South Africa. I guess it'll be about $60 a month. But I can't get through all the content I want to watch on Netflix.
I'm still stuck on YouTube. There's so much good stuff on there.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, I've always said that people will be subscribing to lots of little things, subscribe and go and, stop subscribing if they go to another. So between Netflix and Disney and Apple's new subscription service, people, it's going to be easy to subscribe for a month and watch something you want to do, or maybe for a weekend or for a week. Then, stop it for a little while if you need to, and get back onto Netflix if you want to watch more content. I think that's just going to be the way people are doing it. I mean, that's certainly the way that I do it. If there's nothing on Showmax for a bit that I want to watch, I'd stop it. Stop it for 2 or 3 months until the next thing comes out. Now with the rugby, obviously, I don't know. It's a lot more appealing to have it.
I don't think that will be on Showmax somehow.
I won't. The Springbok row. I guess you're right. But so I must stop. No, but I mean, it's so easy to subscribe, right? So month on, month off, especially if you just want to watch that one show.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously bargaining on the fact that people don't do that, but for consumers that kind of keep control of how they spend their money and what they subscribe to, that's the way to do it.
So launching, I think they said in November, if I'm not mistaken. Be interesting to see what content they've got, but there's a lot of good stuff coming out on Netflix at about the same time, so I don't think I'll be signing up. I've got the next season of The Crown, which is a fantastic show. I don't know if you watched any of The Crown, Richard.
No, I watched David Dobrik. Duncan.
David?
Dobrik.
David Dobrik, I don't know him.
No, he's a YouTuber. No, it's just, I'm joking, but it's funny.
The king of YouTube, is he?
No. Well, he's got a pretty interesting model, and he's making a lot of money. I'm morbidly fascinated by what these people are doing. Well, worth investigating if you want to get into that world.
I'm going to have to make a note and watch that.
Get a posse together, Duncan. That's it.
Right, let's talk about something quite exciting, and that is the imminent release, I think it's imminent, of USB 4. I thought USB 3 was just launched.
Yeah, but we need more speed, more power, more throughput, right?
Do we need USB anymore? I mean, we've got fiber, we've got the cloud.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's still storage, I guess, within, I think content production still drives a lot of it. You still need a lot of very fast throughput for non cloud connected large files.
Hooking up cameras and all sorts of things, I suppose.
I mean, I'm running out of storage regularly because video files are quite large and I've got a lot of them. You don't want to delete them, so you archive them either. Or most of my stuff is on Dropbox, and Dropbox manages it very quickly. If I want to, kind of unsync, I just check the box and say online only, and it'll remove them from our physical drive and keep them online only.
Okay.
But getting your data from one device to another device quickly, or from a camera for that matter. So with USB 4, we're going to see 40 gigabits per second. I mean, that's
40. Wow.
So it's the same, going to be the same speed as Thunderbolt 3, and it will be compatible with Thunderbolt 3. So I guess it's just aligning of the technologies that's making it very appealing for USB users. But it's going to be, I think it's going to be a big benefit for video users because it's going to have better allocation, better resource allocation for video. So you're transferring large files, it's just going to be much quicker. Yes, we have that option with getting stuff to the cloud, probably quicker. Sometimes it's quicker for me to send something to Dropbox and downloading it onto my other machine than it is to, if I have a USB stick around, which I hardly ever do these days. It'll retain the same size, obviously, that little round USB 3 shape that we've come to appreciate.
The USB-C size.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the consumer products, obviously.
Yeah. 40 gigs a second, that's amazing. So I see it's coming out, it should emerge late in 2020, according to an article on Tech Radar. And there's no costing on it yet, but they predict that the cables will not be cheap.
Why? That's an interesting question. I mean, are they going to be much thicker cables? Probably, right?
I don't know.
But it'll be compatible with all the stuff, with all the cables and all the with all the USB technology. It just obviously won't reach that speed.
They'll just need dongles.
Always dongles. Look, it's a little bit exciting if you're requiring more speed. I certainly, when I transfer terabytes of data, I mean, I've got some external drives here that...
You really must stop shooting in 8K, Rahat.
I don't. I do.
Just joking.
It's all my B-roll. It's all the edits, all the incorrect takes I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's even photographs these days. Unless you take a raw photograph, so that's quite a huge. 20, 30 meg file. So yeah, I need to sort out my external drives very quickly, actually, because they take forever to transfer between.
Yeah, I was taking raw images on my Nikon using the FOST shutter release, the auto shutter release. You hold it down, it goes.
Why? That's like 2 terabytes right there.
I'm just going. What? My memory card is full already. It's up to like 1 minute.
Oh man!
So
you're still doing much photography shooting with that? I mean, you're still doing casual shooting with it, or is it still your phone that you're using?
Mostly my phone because the DSLR is so damned heavy. But I do love using it, and I do need to make a plan to go out there. And there's so many good photography groups in Joburg where you can go out and do walks and stuff. And I love the hobby, so I must just find the time to do more of it.
Yeah, it's the purpose of shooting, right? Canon also announced, we didn't put it in the show notes, but Canon announced or leaked, the 90D was just announced, so which is the upgrade in my line of camera.
Okay.
Which is rather exciting.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nikon used to have the D90, now Canon's got the 90D.
Well, they also have the 80D and the 70D and the 60D, so.
Okay. I suppose it follows on then.
Yeah, unless they went the iPhone route and it could have been the Canon, what? IX? IX, yes. What?
Yeah. XA, what is it? Oh, that's their video cameras, XA. I was looking at the XA55 Canon, I think I spoke to you about it. What a beautiful piece of kit that is, but a bit pricey.
Often these days when I look at any of these technologies, I'm trying to justify it, like what can I do with that I can't do with my existing stuff? And every time the answer comes up, I mean, it's for me at least, that there isn't anything. I think for most consumers, it's really the same when you come down to the actual usage.
Yeah.
Still shooting in 10, I mean, if you can, my phone can shoot 4K, which is great, but the files are too big, so I only shoot in 1080. 4K does give you a little bit of brightness, but then when I import it, I immediately step it down to 1080, and then that's the file that I keep.
Mm.
Again, unless you're a pro, for most people, the stuff that you have is probably going to be good enough.
For sure. But it's always nice to drool over these things.
Oh, yeah. No, we want these things. Oh, trust me. We want all of these nice things. But like I always try and justify, like how would I use that better? Yes, I would love to have the new cameras. I mean, more GoPros.
That's very practical of you, Rahat. Very practical of you.
We need to be. Somebody has to talk sense to the kids.
So you're not going to rush out and buy that new Tesla Model S?
Are they available in South Africa yet?
No. If they were, it would be dangerous for my wallet.
Would you sign up, eh?
I'd love one of those. I'd get the Tesla Model 3, actually. That's probably the most practical Tesla.
I think, but yeah, for South Africa, I would still be a little bit hesitant with electric vehicle because I'm a road trip fan, so I want
to
drive into the country. I mean, I'm actually looking at a vehicle now and kind of shopping around for just an old secondhand something. There's a lot of choice out there, especially if you want to kind of just have something not to worry about mileage, for example, like if that's still well looked after.
I saw a very nice Aston Martin DB9 secondhand for sale the other day, if you're interested.
How much? Half a mil? 2 mil? If it was ripping off, I can maybe get the tires.
Yes, the tires are probably worth more than
the badge. Or the keys. The keys are always nice to dangle around.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of nice things, Rahat, this is something you discovered today, I think.
Mm.
Let's get past the ads. Go, micro. We don't know. Come on. Take us to the airport. There we go. No, still more text. So this is there we go. Let's get out the way. Come on, let's go. There we go.
Well, we should just do
look
that.
How beautiful that is. Those are rendered graphics, believe it or not. This is the new Microsoft Flight Simulator, which is coming in Richard, have you fallen off your chair?
I'm sorry.
Are you still there?
I was trying to look at the... I haven't seen the video yet.
Oh, haven't you seen this? No, okay. Okay.
I'm not really... I mean, I appreciate the grip, but wow, that is amazing.
Wait till you see what's coming.
I'm not a massive...
Flotsam fan.
Flotsam fan. I used to be when I was a kid. I guess I just one of those things that I lost, but this is beautiful.
Stunning. Look at that. That's my favorite shot.
Wow.
That's Dubai. Don't know where that is.
And how, I mean, how good are those graphics when you get up close? Or is it the same old thing where it's...
Well, that's rendered in 4K. It looks beautiful.
But how close can you get to those without losing the quality? Because I remember with...
Right up front, right in front of your screen.
I used to fly down to all the places and then the graphics just become worse the closer you get to the ground.
Oh, really? No, I think they've sorted all
that. So you can go in, it'll be a GTA 5 style. You can get into a car and then just, you know, hijack a vehicle and drive around.
No, this isn't...
not quite that.
Grand Theft Aeroplane.
Well, they've got the visual data. They just need to... Ooh, that's nice. They just need to overlay... You see, what I would do with this is I would fly all over South Africa if they've got those models. And I would just... That would what I would do.
That's what I do. I gave up on Flight Simulator years ago and moved to X-Plane. And X-Plane 11 is fantastic. I love it. But this looks like next-gen stuff. It looks incredible. So the news is that if you join the Flight Simulator Insider program, you'll be able to download the first alpha release of this on the 19th of September, which is this week, Thursday, I think.
How big is that file going to be, the download file? 25 teraflops.
I have a feeling this might be over 100 gigabytes.
It will be a big game. And what will the, I mean, the global maps will be beautiful, right? So you'll be able to fly.
Oh, that's a good point. In the alpha release, they'll probably only have limited scenery.
Mm. Oh, you're right. Eh?
Mm. And it'll probably be very buggy. So you will literally crash your plane. But I'm quite excited about this. And I'm really glad Microsoft has reignited this franchise, which I'm pretty convinced they did purely to show off their xCloud functionality.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this is the showpiece of all showpieces, right? If you can produce these type of graphics on any device, really, within a game,
yeah.
Now, this I'm sure there's a lot of potential to this engine as well.
Yeah, and they're going to be delivering this from using the artificial intelligence engine in their Azure data centers. So I think
you'll need to have a network connection.
You'll need fiber to play this, I think. But that's fine. That's fine. You'll need a fiber and a high-end PC.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're into this type of thing, you probably have. But I would certainly, with those graphics, we'll certainly be keen to play this game.
Yeah.
If it's just to get an easy-to-fly plane and flying over South Africa, all the cool places. Because I would never be able to do that, right? Take off from Joburg and go land in Kruger National Park or something.
Yes.
That would be nice to see. Like, what is that like? And then fly low to the ground, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
Vicariously.
I'm trying to find a picture of the original Flight Simulator. Here we go. It's going to take me a moment to get this up on the screen because that's a YouTube video. So let's move on to our regular features in the meantime.
I had one more thing on this. In terms of, I mean, how realistic it's become to... You obviously have... That's beautiful. They'll probably buy new planes, right? They won't have all the planes for free within the package. So you'll have to kind of buy if you want like a F-15 fighter or something.
Yeah, so apparently they are going to make it extensible so developers can also develop plug-in content for it, which is the way X-Plane works, of course. And I think Flight Simulator 10 also allowed you to do that. So, of course, there'll be a huge aftermarket for high resolution, high resolution imagery and for planes and all sorts of things.
I mean, you can become a pilot just by playing this game and getting into the real thing. You'll know your way around the cockpit.
Yes.
And know the procedure. You'll understand the sounds. I mean, it's fantastic to think that this has got some cool practical application for the end of the world. You know, if the end of the world definitely comes, we need to get those flights and pilots out of their PC rooms. Come on, guys.
Some guys really take this all the way and they get the full-on flight gear cockpit stuff. In their home studios and they
screen wraparound screens,
absolutely. Guys have spent hundreds of thousands of rands on
flights. What was the company? Was it Cytec that used to do those amazing? I think they still
do. They're now owned by Logitech. Logitech bought them out.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, those are beautiful. I mean, some of those the hardware is fantastic.
Yeah. So consider what you've been looking at on the screen now, and look at those amazing rendered graphics. And let's go all the way back to 1985 and have a look at a screenshot from Microsoft Flight Simulator 1.0.
Oh, wow.
My word.
No, that is... Look at the quality in the grass there.
Oh, it's amazing. How did they...
And the buildings, look at that. Jeez. You can see each individual level.
I remember playing this game, and I think the first... however many versions of Flight Simulator, we started at Migs Field in Chicago, which is this little runway on a little island off the coastline in, what's the lake there? Is it Lake Superior? No, it's not Lake Superior. It's Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan. I think it might be Michigan. That building you see in the background, let me point to it. I'm going to cut myself off there. That building, you can see the building, is the tallest building. Building in Chicago. I think it's the Sears Tower.
Oh, yes.
Although it doesn't look anything like it in that screenshot. But it just shows you how far computer graphics have come here.
If you look at the dial, it's crazy.
34 years ago, that's what it looked like. And now it looks like that.
It's insane. That is
absolutely insane. I'm just hoping my GeForce 1080 Ti is going to be able to play this. And I don't have to upgrade to one of these new RTX cards. RTX.
I'm sure you'd be able to play the low-res graphics.
I don't want low-res graphics. I want it in 4K.
Look, if they did a really good job, yes, you would be able to. Because a 1080 is a very powerful card, regardless of the new RTX graphics. You should, I mean, if you can play most of the latest games today with that.
Mm. I might just need to install an air conditioner in my PC case.
Isn't this going to be offsetting all the rendering on the Azure servers?
I'm not sure. I don't know how. I'm sure it'll be making extensive use of the PC as well. But can you imagine the data center if we were doing this? And the noise in there as these machines spin up to handle this game remotely.
It's going to be fun to play with, to fly around with people, right?
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait, but I don't think it's out for it. I think it's only out sort of middle to late next year, so it's going to be quite a wait still, unfortunately.
But we'll get your feedback on the alpha release, I'm sure.
Yeah, next week for sure.
We want at least 100 hours flight time from you for an accurate feedback.
I'll try and take some screenshots if I'm allowed to. I suspect there may be something in the agreement you have to sign before you download it that says you can't put video clips up, but if I can, I will. Martin says he used to play that old Microsoft game too. Loved the cracked windscreen when you die. You crash on the ground and there's a crack on your windscreen. Instead of I still don't think, and even the latest versions, they don't do a fiery inferno. And I've gone out of focus again. Martin also says, imagine another 34 years from now, plugged into the Matrix, live forever. He says, WWIT, what does that stand for? Wait a minute, maybe. Might be plugged into the Matrix already. That's what Elon Musk thinks anyway.
Yeah. Look, with graphics like that, I could be convinced. Fly in the world.
34 years from
the world. Yeah.
34 years.
Without a doubt.
We'll be immersed in it.
Yeah, we'll all be living in a VR world.
Given how far it's advanced, I think it's fair to assume that that the virtual world will be indistinguishable from the real world in 34 years from now.
Oh, yeah. And it'll probably be a better place than the real world, to be honest. I mean, again, if you've watched Ready Player One, that's kind of a good analogy, I think, of where it probably won't get as bad, but it has the potential where people just prefer to live in an online world. I mean, a lot of people do already online in a game environment where they have virtual friends and virtual lives.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
Well, it's a bad thing for humanity. I mean, we're not designed to live like that, but I think it's a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, I'm enjoying my game time.
Yeah.
Get immersed in it very quickly. Yeah. As long as you do a balance, I guess.
Yeah. So let's get on to our regular features. Our winner this week is NicePair for their successful listing on Euronext Amsterdam of Prosus, which attracted a market capitalization of, I think, R1 trillion. Very successful listing and goes a long way in helping unlock some of the trapped shareholder value for NicePair shareholders. And we've got two losers this week. The first loser is Cool Ideas, the ISP, who this week blamed a distributed denial of service attack for downtime on their network, which went on for at least a day and a half. And they haven't really provided, they were very poor at communication, about communicating exactly what was wrong. And then they didn't provide any real explanation once the service returned. So I think they can learn a few things from this. Quite poor showing, I thought, particularly in terms of the communication during a crisis by Cool Ideas. So they are our joint loser this week. And our other loser this week is Garmin South Africa, who had some malware on their website, which resulted in users' card details being compromised. And I'm aware of at least one user who got in contact with me directly, who lost 2,000 rand after his card was compromised by this malware. And
so they actually used the details. Used it,
yeah, they did indeed.
When did that happen? When was his card? Did he say?
I haven't spoken to him in any detail yet. I'm actually having a chat with him on LinkedIn, so I'll probably have some more detail this afternoon. But Garmin put out a statement on their website on Friday and said Garmin recently became aware of a theft of customer data as part of a criminal cyber attack that affected customers who placed an order through the shop.garmin.co.za website. This e-commerce site was operated by a third party on behalf of Garmin South Africa. Promptly after learning of this incident, we immediately shut down the impacted system, began an investigation, and contacted the South African Information Regulator. While Garmin does not store credit card information, the unauthorized party leveraged virtual skimming technology to capture customer details at the time of the input, including credit card information. Not good, guys, not good. So you are forever immortalized in Tech Central's loser category.
Somebody's sweating. Some web developer somewhere is really sweating bullets right now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's do our picks. Rachel, what's your pick this week?
So I bought some of these light bulbs on One Day Only the other day. There we go. It's an LED light bulb for like it was 250 Rand or something, but I see you can get them on Takealot. There's various names. Like I couldn't find the exact one. On Takealot, on Amazon, I could. That's the box. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very generic thing. I think it's probably a Chinese import and people just rebrand it. But I'm very impressed with this little thing. I mean, it's what I want to use it for is for product shots to put some color on them. So I've got my white lights, but this will provide a nice color hue on them. So I just wanted to play around with them, and they were cheap enough. And I'm very impressed. The software works very well. You can select virtually any color on a little round color wheel. Mm-hmm. And switch on and off. There's also a white light mode, so you can use it as a normal light bulb. Yeah, it's for $250. It's really, really cool. So if you come across these, I think Takealot's got a few for $299, which is a very similar. The app looks similar. It's probably again the same brand with just a rebrand,
right?
Skin over brand. Also works with Alexa and Google Home, so you can send some commands to it. So yeah, I'm as a first user of an LED light bulb, I've been wanting them for quite a while to do that type of thing with.
And I think Philips is best known for doing one of these, right?
Yeah, the U, that's a fantastic thing. But I mean, when they expensive, came out, they were very expensive. I think they were a few grand,
A few hundred rand, okay.
That's not too bad. I mean, even a grand for some of these I've seen now, some of the high-end ones. So for $250 is certainly a cool investment. Okay, this was on a special, but like I said, you can get them. Get a few different brands, and it creates a nice environment. Often when I'm working in my lights, it's a bit dim. I would put on a little blue, kind of turquoise blue color, and it creates a nice office environment too, which is nice.
Can you turn it into a disco light?
No, it's not that kind of. I've actually got my disco lights, which you can't see. My bulb is. It goes well with the RGB in my computer, then the RGB on the keyboard, and the RGB on the Alienware. So yeah.
Just need to fire up some BGs now.
No, it's not one of those that's light sensitive and it doesn't have all those functions. I know what you want, Duncan.
No, I don't want kind of product. My pick this week, actually I've got two picks, and I don't have a picture for the second one, but I'm going to throw the first one on the screen. I found this on Android the other day. It's quite fun. I had a book when I was a kid, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was a famous book. It was a survival manual. It was written in the 1950s or something, passed on by my father. And this is kind of the Android equivalent, the electronic equivalent. It's called the Online Survival Manual. And that's literally what it is. So the apocalypse comes, which you never know. It might happen any time now, especially since, did you see a an asteroid the size of the Empire State Building whizzed past Earth the other night.
Yeah, like, not good.
I think it was last night, in fact. So, you know, catastrophe could strike at any moment, and you never know. You might need access to this stuff. Although you'll need to keep your Android phone charged so that you can read all this stuff.
I was just going to say, is there a printable version of this?
But
no internet in the bush. The internet's gone down. How do we access? How to make a fire?
Well, thankfully, it's all in the app. It's basically the boy's survival manual. It teaches you how to make tools, how to deal with poisonous plants, how to filter water, basic medicine, crossing water, how to do basic signaling, how to camouflage yourself, etc., etc., etc. So it's kind of fun, and it makes for fun reading. And I think in this internet age, I think a lot of us just don't know how to do this basic stuff. So it's fun if you're bored one afternoon to install this app and read through a few of these things, and maybe even try them out with your kids. But my main pick this week, for which I don't have a picture, is Vivaldi for Android. You'll know, Rechad, I've been using the Vivaldi web browser on my desktop now for a good 2 years, and I absolutely love it. I prefer it to Chrome, and it's been getting better and better and better. And it is finally available for Android as well, and it syncs fully with your desktop version, like Chrome does. It was a bit of a pain, to be honest, having two different web browsers, one on Android and one on Windows. But it now runs on Android as well. So if you haven't checked out Vivaldi yet, it's still in beta, but it hasn't crashed on me once yet, and it's super fast and works brilliantly. So that's my main pick this week, Vivaldi for Android. And if you haven't got the Windows version, or in fact the desktop version, it runs on Linux and Mac as well, grab it. I prefer it to Chrome. And unlike Firefox, it actually does play nicely with publishers. So thanks, guys, for that. Right, back to the show notes. I think that is our show, Rehat, apart from our quiz results. So let me go back to that image. And let me go back there, and let me go to the chat room. I've got so many buttons to press, it's so complicated. Johan has joined us. Missed you guys, he says. He's got two of those lights. Nice. Took 7 months to import via the post office. buy local if you can, or pay for not post office express shipping.
Then definitely check out Take a Lot. They've got a few for $300.
Yeah.
And Macro too. I think Macro's also got a version of this.
Yeah.
Let me just open this tab. I wanted to check. For $279, a Bayonetta.
Nice. But maybe like
this, yeah. Right, with a Bayonetta clip. This is a screw adapter.
But maybe price the Philips Hue as well. Maybe that's come down in price ever since then.
Let's check while we're there.
You know you're getting good quality if you're buying Philips.
Yeah, I mean, in that app, you can actually sync it to do lots of awesome things with... let's see, TP-Link, no, Philips U, white, no, strips, Philips U.
No. While you're looking for that, Martin says, still rocking Vivaldi, Duncan, since you recommended it. It's a really good browser. Good on you, Martin. He says Vivaldi plays nicely on Linux too. Good stuff. Have you found a price, Rechard?
Philip, no.
Is it available locally?
Doesn't seem like it. Philips Hue, I can only find like 60 watt white dimmable LED for $500 type of thing. So nothing with the Philips Hue kind of price. No, maybe somebody, but I would imagine that's going to be within $1,000, I think, with all those functionality features.
Yeah. Well, here's a Philips Hue 4-pack for $1,600.
But I think that's white only. White.
It is white only.
Yeah. Amazon's the best place to go and check, or would it be on Amazon?
It will be on Amazon. Yeah. Doesn't look like it's sold locally because the Google Shopping tab is not showing anything. while you look that up, let's do the quiz results. I'll do the first question. Vox's Frogfoot Networks this week said it was buying the network assets and customers of which fiber broadband provider, and that's Blitz Fiber.
Second question, scientists have discovered water on a potentially habitable super Earth 110 light years away. What is the planet called? And the answer is a very, very memorable K2-18b.
Very memorable indeed.
Want to get a postcard from that place.
Who this week said Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency would not be allowed to be developed on European soil? And the idiot in question is French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire.
Fourth question. This week, two U.S. companies had market caps above $1 trillion at the same time for the first time. Which companies are they? And the answer is the dominant Microsoft and Apple.
That's incredible, actually. So the two most valuable companies in the world are both worth $1 trillion. They were both founded around the same time in the 1970s. They are two of the oldest IT companies in the world. And they're the most valuable in the world. It's incredible, the longevity of these companies. They've been around for 45 years.
And both of them had times when we all thought this might be it for them, right? And they've come back.
Certainly Apple, yeah. Certainly Apple. I mean, Microsoft is also kind of heading downwards under Steve Ballmer. Mm. And Apple, back in the late 90s, was in serious trouble. In fact, ironically, it was Bill Gates who bailed Apple out. And now here we are. 45 years after their founding, and they are the two most valuable companies, vying to be the most valuable company in the world with a market cap each over $1 trillion. There's definitely a business case study in both of these companies, I think.
And they're both actually quite different in their main business. I mean, Microsoft fell completely at the Apple hardware space, in the phone hardware space, or in the hardware space in general, I guess. Their peripherals are always very good, but...
yeah.
Where Apple quite excelled in that. It's interesting.
And last question in this week's quiz. Apple this week announced three new iPhones. What are they called? And that's the iPhone 11. That's the hottie dogs go overhead. The iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 11 Pro Max. Doesn't exactly slip off the tongue, but I think it's better than iPhone XS Max.
Yeah, I know. Jeez, I don't understand the naming. But I guess it is easier. 11, 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, at least they dropped that silly X, so we don't even know. Everyone was calling it the X or the iPhone 10. They didn't know what to say.
XS.
iPhone 10S, XS, iPhone XS, the XS Max. Oh, that was terrible. But at least the naming convention has been simplified a little bit.
They should just stick to a year, like call it the iPhone 2019.
I'm surprised they haven't done that, because they've done that to so many of the other products.
They'll probably date it too quickly. Do you want to be walking around with an iPhone 96? No.
Yeah, they want to encourage people to upgrade all the time. If it hasn't, just looks like an iPhone and hasn't got a model number, then people say, oh, I've just got an iPhone. Which one? I don't know.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think they keep the name to sell more of them, actually. I think that's a good theory.
Well, I mean, our phones are all going to be cloud connected. Like it's going to be working off the cloud, right? So it'll literally just be a dumb device. It won't matter what specs are already on there. It'll get to a point where it's going to be good enough.
Yeah.
Unless you want the VR option, of course. Then you need to get the VR chip upgrade. It's always something.
Yeah. Any guesses what the iPhone will be called in 2020? iPhone 12? Or my money's on the iPhone 5G.
You reckon they'll go there? But then that's going back in time with their numbering, right? Back in the sequence.
But I think they might want to emphasize 5G.
Why don't they just call it the iPhone? The iPhone.
The iPhone XII.
Yeah, I've got Roman numerals. Yes, fantastic.
Great. Well, that's our show for this week. As always, join us on YouTube on Sundays at 1 o'clock at youtube.com/TechCentral and smash that subscribe button, as other YouTubers say. What else? Our WhatsApp line is 071-999-1111. I remembered it this week. How else can you reach us? info@techcentral.co.za if you want to go really old school and use email. But join us in the chat room on YouTube. Thanks everyone for joining us today, Johan, Martin, and everyone else. Thanks for the comments. And Richard, unless you've got anything else, I think we're going to sign off there.
All good from our side.
Until next week, from Richard and myself. Cheers.
Ciao.